T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome back to Overnight America. You heard that story in the news with Alex Degman right at the top of the hour. It seems to fit really well with our August Voice of Caring partner here at KMOX, the Stray Rescue of St. Louis. If you're thinking about adding a new dog or cat to your family, consider naming that animal Bungie. What a great name for a dog. Come here, Bungie. Aw, who's a good Bungie? That's a perfect animal name, isn't it? Don't give me that look. That is a perfect animal name. Bungie. It's great. You would say no to that? You're telling me if a little puppy dog with little puppy dog eyes came up to you and looked you right in the eye and someone from the Stray Rescue came up and said, this is little Bungie, you would look at them with disgust? You would look at that animal and say, I'm disgusted with this puppy dog. Your name needs to change immediately? No, you'd keep that name. It's too good not to. All right, welcome back to Overnight America at Ryan Recker on Twitter. And if you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at KMOX.com/ONA. Make it your favorite podcast app wherever you find your apps or wherever you find your podcasts. And you can hit that subscribe button, support the show. So the San Jose mayor, according to Fox News, he's Mayor Sam Liccardo. In the wake of the shootings that we saw in San Jose, or at least in California, close to San Jose, when you had the Garlic Festival that was going on, you had the one in El Paso, the one in Dayton, and all in a short amount of time. So what this mayor is proposing is a first-in-the-nation move to require all gun owners to carry liability insurance for their weapons. All gun owners. Not just, well, the ones that have a carry permit, not just the ones that have it in public for some reason. All gun owners. Under the proposal, the insurance would cover any accidental discharge of the firearm and any intentional acts carried out by a person who has stolen or borrowed the gun. It would not cover the policyholder for any intentional discharge that he or she carries out. Not intentional, but unintentional. So what do you think? Is this a good idea? Is it a good idea to require all gun owners to have insurance on their gun if they want to be a gun owner? 436-7900 is the number, or 800-925-1120. I think this is a terrible idea. In fact, this is not an idea that you should be cheering for, because for a few different reasons. Number one, who's going to be buying these insurance policies? Okay, it's going to be the lawful gun owner who uses their gun in a lawful way. It's not going to be the person that uses it for illegal purposes. You think the ones that are going out, like let's say we're talking St. Louis, for example. You think the ones that are going out for doing these drug deals, shooting other people, the ones that are responsible for shooting these innocent children in these terrible circumstances, do you think they're the ones that are going to be out there buying firearm insurance just in case? Not a chance. Not a chance. So you're going to put an extra burden on someone that is a law-abiding citizen. But it goes even further than that, and it gets a little bit deeper. What ultimately happens if you're going out there and requesting insurance for your gun? If you're a law-abiding citizen that has a firearm legally, what happens when you go and get insurance? Is it possible they may put together, a database of all legal gun owners, and perhaps sometime in the future that database will be shared with the government, or maybe the government would forcefully make sure they get their hands on this just in case they decide in the future at some point that we need to round up all the guns and legally take them away from you through their means like we've seen in other countries? Do you think that's what would happen? Absolutely. So then what do you have? You have a list of lawful gun owners that haven't committed crimes other than, let's say, a Bernie Sanders of the world, or a Joe, well, not necessarily Joe Biden, but a Bernie Sanders of the world, or one of these very far left Democrats that say, kumbaya, we need to get rid of the Second Amendment. And next thing you know, they're out there saying that you have to force, they're going to forcefully take these away from you. And if you don't, under penalty of law, you would go to jail. We're not talking about a voluntary buyback, a forced gun seizure. So that's what these things lead to. Why wouldn't you be a little bit leery when the government wants to step in and try to take this backdoor step in order to threaten your Second Amendment rights? So far, the bill, like in the House, for example, since we've started talking about this gun debate again, and we're doing it over and over again, there's two bills that would tighten background checks. But since the Senate is currently on recess, it hasn't really gone anywhere. And they say that the plan is based on similar laws in California that make it illegal to drive a vehicle without insurance. What a great comparison. So the mayor of San Jose, Mayor Liccardo, goes out there and says, oh, it's just like it's illegal to drive a vehicle without insurance. My goodness, maybe he should visit St. Louis and realize what it's like going down the highway when you see no less than five vehicles with either illegal or no plates on the back. There's not a day in the life of a St. Louisan that you encounter no one, or you encounter 100% fully in the law when it comes to registration and tabs. Every day. I should keep a counter. I should keep one of those little hand counters, those little clickers. And every time I see someone with no plates or an expired tag or whatever on the back, if I were to click it, the odometer would have rolled over about eight times since I've lived here in 2 years. So if you want to try to compare it to, oh, it makes it illegal to drive a vehicle without insurance, that's the wrong thing because it doesn't work. What you're doing is you're finding ways to tax the people that want to do this lawfully, and then you have the people wanting to get around it that will continue to get around it. 436-7900 is the number. You think it's a good idea to require insurance if you're a firearm owner? You think that this is the right way to go? Just insure the weapon, and from here on out, everything will be just fine. No problems whatsoever. Everything will be peachy keen. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Got a text message with a link to a news article. Our texting really doesn't work that way, so I can't click on it. But thank you for that. If you wanted to text in, you can at 436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Or maybe you just want to call in and tell producer Mike that Bungie is a great name for an animal. That'd be a cute dog. You know it. You absolutely know that's true. Kind of a slow night. I'm surprised. I thought tonight we had some pretty good topics. I thought, yeah, people are going to want to talk about this. People are going to want to talk about that. No, I guess not. So maybe I'll just have to save all my energy for Drex, which we'll get to after 1 o'clock. Our friend Johnny Rabbit has a presentation at the History Museum tomorrow morning. The right stuff. We'll talk about writers and the writing process with Johnny Rabbit next segment there, a little after the weather at about 12:33-ish. Yeah, it's past midnight. So now that everyone's starting to get back into the school mode and your kids are starting to get back to school, and I think today was the last day at Six Flags when they're open during the week, so now they're only open on the weekends. That's how you know summer is starting to wind down. The college kids are going back to school, and I remember that time when you would load up the car and go back and you think, okay, let's do this again. The summer's never long enough. Kids starting preschool here soon. I've got a lot to do, and every parent is out there. Now, have you considered the idea that one day you may have to take your kid out of school for a mental health day? In Oregon, KVAL reporting this, mental health days were recently signed into law, which means that if you want to take your kid out for a mental health day, you get five a year. Kind of like if you're working a job, you get sick days, you got a personal day, you got vacation days. But they're going to add in mental health day for kids to take a little bit of time away. In a recent survey, it showed that many students skip school because of mental health issues like anxiety and depression. You think that perhaps these mental health days will be abused? Well, probably. But would it be good for the kid to have a day off if it clears their mind? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be just fine. I don't really have a problem with it per se. I'm thinking about when I was in high school. I probably wouldn't even have taken a day. I don't think I had one sick day in high school. I don't think I had one sick day in grade school. Maybe I did. I just don't remember. But I don't think even in college, I think I missed one day in college where I skipped classes. One day, that's it. But these mental health, the idea of it is that students could take them up 5 days in a 3-month period. You can use these days depending on your condition. And they say that, quote, I think it's going to have to be a judgment call. People that know them well, investing in the child, checking in with them, what's leading to the situation? Is there something else going on at school that may have been causing some of that difficulty? Kids are already taking these days. Adults take mental health days. We just need to call it something else because they don't want these kids necessarily singled out. So they hope this will help ease some of the anxieties for students. I wonder if you can take them on a big test day and, oh boy, I got that big test. I'm too stressed out. I don't want to take the test. Ah, mental health day. You'll just take it when you come back. You can strategically use these things. There's other issues that these teens are faced with too, because they feel like there's this certain stigma around it. But I feel like in a lot of these school situations, there's not going to be a lot of stigma. It's more or less like, you know, the little wink, wink, nudge, nudge, like, oh, mental health day, huh? Yeah, you took one yours, you took yours, okay. And even if they try to play it cool, it'll probably still do them a lot of good, honestly. There's a lot of pressures that go on to be a kid anymore. Mike calling in from St. Louis. Hey, what's going on?
About the guns?
Yeah.
I'm trying to be fair. I don't have a gun, but this insurance policy that you're talking about, I don't think. And I'll tell you what I think would be bad. About it. Here's what I think is bad. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're a responsible gun owner, and I stole your gun, and I shot somebody.
Uh-huh.
Is the insurance going to cover for what I did?
Well,
and it's not your fault?
In this case, it would. So if you reported it stolen, I guess it helps cover that sort of
thing. I mean, if I stole it and shot somebody, you're not responsible for stealing your gun in the first place.
Right now, I don't know what your liability would be if someone stole your property and used it in a legal way. I guess if you secured it and reported it properly to the police, then no, I don't think you'd have that liability.
But the insurance policy wouldn't. But here's what I think is the solution. Here's what I think you should do.
Yeah.
I think they should not take guns away from the decent citizens. I think they need to teach more classes about being responsible.
Yeah. You see, your phone's cutting out here.
Oh,
I can't hear.
I think they should teach classes about not take guns away from the decent people, like using their guns in a decent way. I think they should teach classes to people about being a responsible gun owner,
mm-hmm.
and not blame the guns when somebody uses a gun the wrong way. That's a person doing that.
Yeah.
And it's easy to blame. Don't get me wrong. I believe.
Uh-oh.
But if somebody goes kill somebody,
yeah.
Why they blame the gun?
Mike, I got to ask. Your phone keeps cutting out. I always wonder about this. It seems like lately when you've been calling in, your phone's been cutting in and out a lot lately. Did you change your service?
Oh, no. It's just one of the phones. I'll go back. I hope you heard. Did you hear the part about the gun responsibility? I think instead of taking the guns away from the decent citizens, I think they should teach classes mm-hmm. about being a responsible gun owner.
Yeah.
See, if I stole anybody's gun and went and killed somebody, that's not that gun owner's fault. That's my fault for stealing. Number one, I shouldn't be doing it, and I shouldn't shoot somebody. It's easy to blame on another person when I'm the guilty person if I done it.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Good to hear from you. Bye. Yeah, the class thing, people have brought that up before. Take a certain class, you know, and require you before you're allowed to do that. Well, it depends on certain weapons, and I know there's certain restrictions for some higher-end weapons where you have to get permits or at least licenses from the government, and in some certain circumstances, if you're going to teach it or whatever it is. So there's certain qualifications in certain states, too, when it comes to concealed carry. You know, Missouri's a little bit different in that sense, but a lot of the states I've lived in, including, like, Indiana, you got to go through certain classes. And yeah, I get that. There's that. Thanks for calling in on the other part of it. Here's another story. And I guess this kind of mixes schools in different policies that are going to go into place. In fact, you find this one on KMOX.com. Schools can go on lockdown with just a teacher's fingerprint, thanks to a Missouri company, Safe Defend. Did you see this story out there? It looks like, and I've seen these before, they're like little small lock boxes, but instead of it opening up from the top like you would normally see a lock box, there's a little door that opens on the side, and it looks like there's like a little fingerprint reader on it, and the doors pop open which would give you access to whatever is inside that safe. So you can put, I guess you could put a gun in there, but you can put anything inside of these things. But the idea is you just use the little fingerprint reader and it opens up on the side. There's a physical key you can put into it too, but for the convenience of, I just got to get into this real quick and I want to secure, that works out pretty well. If you go to the story, it says, among schools back in session that started today, you have St. Louis Public Schools, Afton, Melville, Parkway, many others. There's a Kansas City area company that is offering a new way to protect students from active shooters. It's called Safe Defend, and it allows students to put the school on lockdown immediately. So basically, this is what it is. You have this lockbox, and inside of it, there's batons, mace, trauma kits, and tools. And then on the side of this thing, there's like a little, the only way I can describe it, it's like a small little electronic device. I mean, it kind of looks like a touchscreen almost. I can't really tell from this picture. Let's just say it's a touchscreen. It looks like almost what, like an iPhone or whatever on its side. And it has some instructions on there. And there's like a little keypad with the numbers, you know, 0 through 9 on it. And I think the idea is you use the fingerprint of a staff member, you know, just to make sure it's registered. And then you punch in the code and the school would go to an immediate lockdown. So that way you can alert everyone else immediately if there was something going down. The entire school would know instead of pulling the fire alarm or whatever it is. And then the certain procedures would take place. There is nothing wrong with making sure you have a procedure in place. There is nothing wrong with making sure you know what to do if this scenario ever does happen. And let's hope it never does. But if it does, there's nothing wrong with preparing for these things. It's kind of like at your own home. If you're a parent, you have to go through certain scenarios with your kid just in case. You know, what happens if there's a fire? What happens if you see this? What happens if there's a down power line? And you hope that these things never happen. But you got to talk to your kids and prepare it. And it's almost like you, in schools, it's just one of these things that people are preparing for. Like my parents' generation, or you know, I'd say even my grandparents. Yeah, this is probably a little bit older than my parents' generation. And some of you might remember this. Do you remember when you would go through the drills if there was a nuke that went off close to the school? Yeah. Let's say during the Cold War or even before that, let's say back in the 60s or whatever. Remember, they would have these drills just in case a nuclear device went off. They would tell you to duck and cover underneath your desk, and they went through these drills, but they went through these things, and thank goodness none of that ever happened here in the United States, but they prepared for it. It's kind of like that anymore. There's these immediate threats, and there are people that are crazy out there. So, you know, I can see why some schools prepare, and good for them that do. Johnny Rabbit's going to be coming in next. Actually, over the phone, we have a presentation to talk about. His presentation is at the History Museum tomorrow morning. You'll get more info on that on Overnight America KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. This text message that came in, you said it, is the fact school started. I was driving about 7 p.m. and the highway was dead. All right. Doesn't that feel nice? You get the highway to yourself and then you start wondering, I wonder if that means it's easier for me to get singled out by a cop if I'm speeding. And you look down and you realize, oh, better control it. Yep. Welcome back to Overnight America. Joining us now is another name you'll recognize, Johnny Rabbit, the Missouri History Museum. He has another great presentation coming up this Wednesday, August 14th, called The Right Stuff. Johnny, thank you so much for coming back on.
Well, of course, Ryan. Thank you. Thank you for having me back on. It's very kind of you to do this. And I know it's of interest to a lot of people because I'll tell you, there's so much about history in St. Louis that people want to learn about, that want to know, or maybe reminisce about. And that's what this is all about. The program is called The Right Stuff. That's W-R-I-T-E. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's about. It's about our background, our city, writing, about authors, of columnists in newspapers, about publishers and editors. Gee, anything with writing. Like Kevin Colleen is going to be there.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's very nice of him to do it. He's going to talk about not only writing for news, writing a news story, writing a feature story like his features, which are so wonderful, and writing the KMOX holiday radio play. And plus, he's written 4 novels. And all of these are totally different. He's doing hard news. He's doing features. He's doing a play, which is very difficult to do, and novels. So he's going to have quite a story to tell people. Some of this, I guess you could say, is educational in nature, because all of our speakers are going to talk a little bit about a how-to. You know, if somebody's in the audience, I'd like to put out a book or an article, or how do I research something? We have
a lot
people from
of people.
The History Museum, Emily Jacox, she's their chief librarian, and she can tell people, okay, if you want to write a story about any history of St. Louis, how can you get that material? It exists, fortunately, here. We have a lot of background.
I think that's great. A lot of people always wonder, can I do this? So they all think they have what it takes, but it is a very difficult process. And Kevin's a great person to lay that out. We've had so many great stories come out of St. Louis that have been shared and documented. And we have some very famous people, like Mark Twain, for example, being here in Missouri. There's a lot of great works that originate from this region.
Sure. Eugene Field, known as the children's poet, Little Boy Blue, Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod, and so on. From here, his family home is a museum, the Field House Museum. Sarah Teasdale, she was a poet. She had a very interesting but very sad life, committed suicide. But we're going to have a person do a dramatic reading of one of her poems. Now, she wrote very short poems, so this is, a dramatic reading of a poem. It's only about 30 seconds long, but it's so well written. And if it's done properly, it really has a great deal of meaning, rather than just looking at the printed word, hearing somebody speak the words of Sarah Teasdale. And all of this is going to happen Wednesday. We open the doors at the Missouri History Museum, Lee Auditorium, which is in the lower level of the Jefferson Memorial Building on Lindell at the foot of the Bolivar. The best way to get in, if you're getting there early, like 9:45 or so, is use the park side entrance. The auditorium will open at 10, and we're going to have a nostalgia piece. We've never done this before. It's a filmed nostalgia piece, all shot in St. Louis. That has technically nothing to do with writing. But for example, at every show, we try to have some kind of live music or so on that doesn't necessarily coincide with the show. But this is so memorable about St. Louis music and growing up in St. Louis. I really feel our audience is going to love it. And then we'll get the program proper right about 25 after 10 o'clock.
You keep things pretty fast-paced. The reason, you have so much you want to pack into that time, and you know that you have to get it within that time frame, because, you know, people have places to go. You want to be courteous of everyone else's time that has came to enjoy it, plus the speakers that are there. It's unbelievable how much you could keep in there. You are like that conductor. I mean, you are out there. You keep a little pocket watch. You keep looking at it. You know if things are on time or not. So when people get up there, you're getting the best of the best, and you are getting
a
condensed version of it, but you learn so much, and it's just a really awesome, awesome time.
Thank you. Headlines of History.
That's a cool idea, too, for this.
Well, Headlines of History is an exhibition going on at a place you visited, the Mercantile Library, and Tom Ray from the library is going to talk about that. And it's all about newspapers, not all in St. Louis, but probably 90% about it's kind of a history of St. Louis newspapers, what was in the papers over the years, editorial cartoons, comic strips, and so on. And then he'll also be talking about the Mercantile Library collection of the Globe Democrat. When the Globe closed in late October 1986, the Mercantile Library stepped forward and took everything for permanent storage at their library, which is now at UMSL. It's all of the clippings. I'm looking at some of the clippings right now. As a matter of fact, this one I've got in my hand right now is they're all done and put in little envelopes. Everything, I've got a small envelope about everything that was ever written in the Globe Democrat about Marvin Miller. Marvin Miller was an actor from St. Louis, went to Booter Grade School, Cleveland High School. And he was in a lot of movies, usually as a bad guy in movies, but he was the Mr. Anthony on the TV show The Millionaire, the guy that would give away the $1 million on every show. So this is the kind of stuff that's in the Globe collection. And in addition to that, they have all of the photographs that were in the Globe Democrat, the actual photographs over all the years from 18... Well, probably he started in the 1860s or 70s with the photographs up until 86. So he'll be talking about that. And then Carol Shepley has a terrific big, I guess you'd call it, cocktail table, coffee table book called St. Louis, An Illustrated Timeline. Mm-hmm. And she'll be specifically speaking about writers from St. Louis that are in her book. And then we have another guy named Tom Grady. He's a retired judge. He wrote a book called The Lost St. Louis Riverfront, mm-hmm. 1930 to 1943. Now, that's the period of time that everything in the center of downtown and the riverfront from 3rd Street down to the levee was torn down to make way for the Jefferson National Expansion Memorial. Mm-hmm. This is before the Gateway Arch was even conceived.
Sure.
And he documents every building that was there, pictures of it, and basically what was in that building and are there any remnants of it. The only building that left, there are hundreds of buildings. The only one left is the old cathedral downtown.
Really?
And everything else is gone. And he, Tom Grady, and also Carol Shepley will be there afterwards from noon to 12:30 to sign their book. If people want to buy it, that's great, or just to meet them.
Interesting. All there.
Yep.
Wednesday morning.
Yep.
Nice thing is, you don't really need to do much other than show up because it's free. You don't have to RSVP. You don't have to go online and tell people you're coming. All you got to do is park your car, come on in. It's that easy.
That's right.
Yeah. I've been to some of those events where they say RSVP or do this or do that, and you got to jump through a bunch of hoops, and they want your email, they want your phone number, and then they upsell you. None of that. You just show up. This is for the benefit of the community.
Well, thank you. It is, and it's a great way to learn about St. Louis. Even if people are right now listening and say, "Oh, I don't know any of that stuff," well, then you're going to find out about it. You're going to find out what makes this city tick. Why are we so proud? Not just of the past, but how the past can be a gateway into the future of St. Louis by utilizing some of the knowledge of the people who were here before, including people like Scott Joplin talking about writing music. It's not just technically about the written word.
I like just walking into the Missouri History Museum, too. It just feels good to do that. And you have a place to go and a seat waiting for you. It's for the presentation Wednesday morning. The Right Stuff, Written Words of St. Louis. Doors open at 10 o'clock. 10:30, the presentation starts. Johnny Rabbit, thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America.
All right, thank you. I hope to see you down there again sometime.
Mm-hmm. It's always a fun conversation, which we'll post online. You can get it on the podcast by going to KMOX.com/ONA. And welcome back to Overnight America. And I'm always wondering when the right time is to go somewhere. And with all the kids going back to school now, a lot of the attractions, if you went there the last couple of days, you realized were jammed as they were trying to fit in as much as they could before the school year started. Zoo. I heard Magic House. Debbie did a spot there and mentioned an exhibit or whatever that's going on, and went over there just recently, and it was so packed we couldn't even get inside. It was like, oh my goodness. So everyone's trying to jam in everything they can. I think it was earlier today, the last day at Six Flags before they close it, just so they open it back up on the weekends only, you know, the Monday through Fridays, or at least Monday through Thursdays. I don't know what the weekend counts for them, probably Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but either way. People jam there, too, and they all want to get that last little bit of summer in. I totally understand that. You know what is kind of crazy? There's a few mysteries I don't know if we'll ever solve, and the mystery of Amelia Earhart being one of them. There's a new special that's coming out, and they keep kicking the tires of Amelia Earhart, which I don't understand. I understand that it would be nice to figure out what happened, but is it one of those mysteries that it's necessary to put out a new special every year? So the Discovery Channel's got a new one that's coming out. And there's another mystery that everyone's talking about, too. Like, for example, Jim Krasula with CBS News.
Small, older model televisions have appeared on the front porches of more than 50 houses in an upscale neighborhood outside Richmond, Virginia. Residents are tuned in.
I think it's just a prank.
Residents are tuned in.
Some college students who are just bored.
I don't know. What is he trying to prove? I don't know. Why do people do anything? People are weird.
One doorbell camera showed a person wearing a TV-shaped headgear while dropping off a TV set. A similar incident happened in a nearby neighborhood a year ago. Jim Krasula, CBS News.
Oh, isn't that interesting? It could be just pranks. I used to do these stupid little pranks when I was, you know, high school, college, whatever, to your buddies. We did a couple of different. There were some common ones we used to do. So if we knew someone was out somewhere, we would. I wouldn't endorse anyone doing this. And the only reason I say this is because we always did it to our friends. We didn't just have random people we would do this to. But we worked at a Parks and Rec department, and we had access to all the janitorial supplies, including the fresh urinal cakes. Yep, you know those little pink things that look like pucks? Don't smell so great, but I guess compared to what they're going to hide the smell of, it's not all that bad. We used to take those, crumble them up, and like sprinkle them around and in like the crevices of cars in the air intake. So when they would turn the air on, it would smell like a urinal cake in their car. Now, I thought that was pretty clever back then. I thought we were being real funny. I think we needed to step our game up. So you've probably seen the viral video of the televisions on the people's heads. They walk up the porch, they drop these old tube TVs off, and then they leave. They just leave it right on the porch. There's a couple of things that could be going down here. This is so stupid. I'm even embarrassed bringing up the urinal cake thing. It's not too often you get to use that term on the radio. In fact, this may be the only time that term's ever been used on KMOX is on this program. I think I've told that story before, though. So, yeah, that's what we used to do. And, you know, we were just, look at that. How about that? Watching one of the networks right now, I think that's KMOV has their program on and they're showing the video of it. It's got the guy's got that on his shoulder. He's wearing a sweater and gloves, and they're just walking around with this thing on its head, and they walk up the stairs, and then they drop the TV off. They turn their back to the door where the door ring doorbell is so they can see them doing that, and then they just walk off the porch. I wonder if they specifically target people with ring doorbells. This is the first thing I thought of. Even though CBS brings up the angle that it could just be pranksters, and I'm sure there's college and high school pranksters that are, you know, thinking this is funny, and it kind of is funny. But to me, it's a little bit expensive if you're doing, what, 60 TV sets? Even if you were to go to, like, a Goodwill scenario and you're trying to find a secondhand store that still has these sort of tube TVs, they kind of are in demand. Retro gamers, the ones that have the old video game systems, you just can't get the same experience on a new television. It's just the way the televisions are. So what they do is they go out there and they try to find these old TV sets to make it more fun. Well, they have these videos of people picking up these TVs. And well, think about this, 60 TVs, how expensive would it be? Even if you bought them super cheap at 10 bucks a pop, you think like high school students are going to drop $600 and orchestrate all of this? This is what I think is most likely the thing that's going on there. And you find this with people that are trying to leverage viral videos in order to get them a gig. What they'll do is they'll try to put these hoaxes together. Doesn't matter where you are. And they'll say, okay, here's our idea that we're going to do this. We got to do something weird, unique. We got to get people's attention somehow. And then they start doing this and they hope that local news picks it up. They hope that people share it and find it weird and strange on social media. They don't have to have their name attached to it, but they could take credit for it as if it was a marketing ploy. So let's say they're trying to get a job at a, you know, some kind of advertising agency or some sort of marketing or social media at a large network or whatever it is. When they put it on their resume, well, I did a viral video once. We did this hoax thing and we put these TVs on people's porches. And when we looked it up, you know, it was covered on these major networks and, you know, this many million people saw it. And, you know, it shows that we know how to put viral videos together. And you know what? That's attractive to people that are hiring in that type of line of work. I think that's probably what's going on there. No high school kid spending $600, $700, $1,000 on TVs. It's just not happening. And of course it's weird. And of course they got all these videos that show them the aftermath. Oh, I found a TV on my porch. Oh, here's the video. And isn't it weird too that a lot of these different areas have the ring doorbells where they have the video footage of them going up there? Seems a little orchestrated if you ask me, if they're specifically going after people that have video surveillance where they can pick this up and make sure to share it so it could get that viral status. So that's the, I guess, small mystery that's going on. How about the larger mystery? If you are an Amelia Earhart fan and you always wondered what happened to her, there's going to be a documentary that airs on National Geographic October 20th. Thanks to an old photograph, an explorer believes he can solve the mystery of the disappearance. How many times have you heard this one? Well, about once a year. You know, when they're not airing Shark Week, they thought they might as well put together another Amelia Earhart special over and over and over and over again. So an explorer by the name of Robert Ballard, who worked for companies that tried to find the wrecks of like Nazi battleships and the Titanic, things like that, believes he can crack the case using a photograph and find the clues of where this thing went down. He says it's not like Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster. He's 77 years old. He's getting a little bit old. Be going around looking for crash sites. Says that plane exists, and I'm gonna find it. I'm gonna find Atlantis. I mean, Amelia Earhart. So she disappeared in July of 1937. No one's been able to find the wreckage. They don't exactly know what happened to her. Very famous story, of course. But as soon as she disappeared, everyone had their own speculations of what was going to be happening here. So they find this photograph. They believe that they found a landing gear of the plane, so now they think they know where the plane is, kind of, but not really. Even though this picture's been around for, you know, decades and nearly a century, the photo was dug up most recently as part of the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery, T-I-G-H-A-R, TIGAR, sounds like the Winnie the Pooh friend, as part of the Amelia Research Project that's out there. So he's going to go to this spot, he's going to try to find it. Discovery Channel is going to milk this thing for everything it's worth. It's a documentary on October 20th, so it's going to be, what, a two-hour documentary? I'm just going to guess. And then you're going to hear this, coming up this hour, was it a landing gear? Stay tuned. When we come back, and they bring the experts in, and they'll say, well, I guess it kind of looks like a landing gear, and this matches what's going on over here. And then they play the dramatic music in the background. Ooh, boom, boom, boom. And they keep bringing the experts in. Boom, boom. I think we found it. Stay tuned. And then they get to the end of the documentary, and ultimately nothing happens. It's a bunch of nothing. They show up and they say, oh, we couldn't get to the site, or oh, we couldn't get under the water, or oh, inconclusive, or oh, I guess it's been washed away, or oh, we really got close now, didn't we? Every single time. How about you wake me up when you actually find something? I'm done with all of these in anticipation of this. And why is it that the Amelia Earhart thing? Again, every single year there's a new one of these that pop up. And nothing new is ever brought up. Now, have you ever watched one of these and anything groundbreaking has happened? Not ever. Not once. They just keep going back to that Amelia Earhart. Well, there's so many other mysteries you could be solving. You don't have to keep going back to the one that you're not solving. Solve something. I like that these guys are professional detectives or searchers, and they're so professional that they never find anything, ever. Oh, look what we got here. Nothing. So our friend Drex, we hook up with him every Tuesday night, and we connect the United States with Canada, his show, The Late Shift. He's broadcasting on the Chorus Radio Network. I always have a great time with him, so I look forward to these moments every week. He'll be coming up. And if you got any questions for Drex, I guess you could text them in at 436-7900. I'm on Twitter at Ryan Recker, the podcast at KMOX.com/ONA. Don't go anywhere. This is Overnight America.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.